welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, August 31st, 2017. I'm your host today, Scott Burton. Glad to have you with us as always. On today's show, Sarah Raster will give us an update on the Year of Kindness campaign. We'll learn about an upcoming presentation with Dr. Emily Kane about marijuana as medicine. We'll get a preview of this weekend's Con Brio concert, A Call to Life. And Meredy Davis, this month's featured artist at the Juno Artists Gallery, we'll talk about her First Friday show tomorrow, and Nancy DeTourney will be here with Arts Up. As always, those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon, currently 54 degrees in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native people in Los Angeles are celebrating the decision by the City Council to commemorate the contributions of Native people by replacing the Columbus Day holiday with Indigenous Peoples Day. The Council voted 14-1 Wednesday to recognize the day on the second Monday of October after hearing testimony which included much opposition from members of the Italian community. But Native American groups say the move helps in reconciliation for past wrongs committed against Indigenous people. In this press conference recorded by First Nations Experience Television, Vice Chair of the City and County's Native American Commission, Chrissy Castro, says it's a victory for everyone who believes in justice.
I am looking forward to our contributions being deeper, being more recognized, to our communities being more visible. And I also stand here not only to say that it's a good day to be Indigenous, but it's a good day to be an Angeleno. Because Los Angeles decided today that we are choosing the side of truth and justice. We are choosing to reconcile with our past. I think the events at Charlottesville have shown us how much we need racial healing in this country.
A number of cities have already moved to recognize Indigenous people instead of Christopher Columbus. L.A. becomes the largest city in the U.S. to do so. City Councilman Mitch O'Farrell helped lead the effort. He says L.A. has 4 million people, which he believes sends a signal to the rest of the country.
Today is a moment where we took a step that is righteous, that is just, that is healing, and that is historically clear. And only when we acknowledge the truth can we heal.
O'Farrell says paperwork still needs to be finalized and is doubtful it will happen for a holiday this year, but is hopeful for official recognition in 2018. A federal court on Wednesday ruled descendants of Cherokee freedmen have a right to tribal citizenship. The Cherokee Phoenix reports freedmen descendants have been fighting to be part of the Oklahoma tribe for years. The court decision points to an 1800s treaty, which the court says entitles freedmen rights of Native Cherokees over the tribal constitution. About 10 years ago, Cherokee citizens amended their constitution to limit citizenship to those with Indian blood. Freedmen were slaves once owned by Cherokee people. The court ruling states the tribe can define itself as it sees fit, but its right to determine membership is no less now due to the treaty. The Cherokee Nation has long maintained it has the sovereign right to determine who its citizens are. In northeastern Manitoba, 3 First Nations are being evacuated due to wildfires. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The Canadian Red Cross says it's probably the biggest evacuation in years. The 3 First Nations are the Wasagamac, St. Teresa Point, and Garden Hill Bands, about 400 miles northeast of Winnipeg. The Red Cross has begun coordinating a huge evacuation to get the residents to safety. 3,700 people are being flown out to hotels in Brandon and in Winnipeg, but the sheer numbers is causing a problem. Sean Feely is with the Canadian Red Cross.
In the last couple of years, this is probably the largest evacuation in one area due to fires.
There are now plans in the works for a large group shelter in Winnipeg to accommodate as many as 2,000 people. One of the problems is that there are already about 900 people from another First Nation that was evacuated a few weeks ago. One of those evacuees said it was heartbreaking to leave her home.
A lot of land is burnt and hunting grounds are burnt, you know. And we live off the land.
It's not clear how long the present evacuation process will take. The airstrips can only accommodate smaller planes, those that can carry up to 45 people at a time. The Royal Canadian Air Force has offered to help. And on the ground, there are crews from Manitoba, Ontario, and Minnesota fighting the fires. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, proud partners of the American Indian Science and Education Society's National Conference, September 21st to 23rd, helping prepare the next generation of STEM leaders. More at bnsf.com/tribalrelations. And by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 31st, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. And with me in the studio now is cutwork or banner artist Merity Davis. Welcome to the show, Merity.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. If you had to describe what your art looks like to our viewers, how would you do that?
It's along our lines of in Mexico, they have these wonderful banners they string up for any occasion that have cut patterns in them, designs people, you know. And so I love those, the color and the motion of them. So I make them in nylon fabric in panels, hand cut, and then I sew them onto a tape. So it makes a long string, which you can hang up inside or outside. They wave around. And mostly I do wildlife, Alaskan, so I do whales and eagles, you know, ravens and fish.
I like the sort of comparison to the Mexican flags. I remember it sort of also made me think of like Tibetan prayer flags a little bit.
Yeah, every culture, you know, like every culture has its type of flatbread.
Mm-hmm.
And every culture has something, you know, for celebrations. And the Himalayan, you know, prayer flags, it's along the same lines as far as visual, fluttering, and colorful.
You've been in Juneau for a long time. How did you get into this?
Was a total fluke in 1977, so 40 years. Came up on a fishing boat that was just finished. Ended up getting here on a day when it was 80 degrees for 3 weeks, and I went, wow. And I'm still here.
Yeah, yeah. And how about making the art?
That's kind of been one thing and another all my life. My mom was a person who took her kids on the bus. I grew up in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and she'd keep us, she'd take all of us on the bus, take us to the Young, take us to performances in the park. So we always kind of recognized the importance of that and tried our hand at one thing and another. I have twitchy hands, and I want to do something. So it's bookbinding, or it's jewelry, or it's ceramics, or it's now it's this.
Okay, and you are a member of the Juneau Artists Gallery, right?
I am.
That co-op. Can you describe where you all are located? And you're the featured First Friday artist tomorrow, correct?
Yes, I am. So for the month, they have a rotating slate of artists who can have that month as their featured time. And it's in the Senate Building on South Franklin. And I'll be there tomorrow afternoon, evening, so I'll be doing some demonstrating. I've only been a member for about 6 months, so I'm kind of new at the artist gallery. My friend Chef Steph mentored me into that.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, I'll be doing some demonstrating. I've got some stickers, which is my newest thing, which I started doing to put on laptops and whatnot. So I'll be demonstrating that and having some First Friday only prices on those as well.
Yeah, and I took a picture. You have a sort of a water jug here, and with one of your stickers on it. I took a picture of that, and I'll put that up on the K2 Facebook page for our listeners to see. Can you describe it for our listeners?
Well, I do a lot of fish, so it's just a stainless steel water bottle and any smooth surface. So this one has goldfish on it with bubbles, and they stick on there great, and you can knock it about. That's been about a year. So that's kind of my newest cut work project, and that can go on, you know, your car or your laptop or your window.
What's your process like? What's your studio like? How much time do you spend at this, and what's that time like?
My husband's a commercial fisherman, so for 40 years, so I'm home a lot in the summer. And so in the evening, basically, I have to do something. And so this I've been doing for about 10 years, and they got to have a cutting mat and an X-Acto knife or a craft knife with replaceable blades and a strong light and my glasses. That's my tools, basically.
Music?
Mostly I'm kind of a Netflix and movies kind of a deal.
Okay. Where have you, so, you know, I again think of these as sort of banners or flags that can reach across a space. Where have you seen these that you think they look the best or fit the best?
I've seen them in classrooms, which is a great, I am always excited to see that. And they just kind of swoop along and in the air currents they move and, you know, so I like that. Outdoors, like along the roof, you know, the edge of an eaves, that's kind of a good spot for them. But they're basically in the middle of a room, not against the wall, you know, in the middle of the room where they can move. And
you mentioned they're made out of nylon, so they can indeed go outside.
Right. So I first started doing them out of tissue paper, so people, of course, were like, wait a second. So it took me a while to find a nylon that was light enough and came in some jazzy colors. So what it is spinnaker fabric from sailboat, sail manufacturing.
I'm sure people can relate to that here in Juneau. Excellent, Meredy. So tomorrow, about what time are you going to set up down there?
4 o'clock. I believe the official start time is 4:30.
Yeah, sounds about right. And if you had to describe where the Senate building was to someone who's never been there, how would you do that?
Downtown, there's the clock at the intersection there. So just a half a block down South Franklin on the mountainside.
Okay. Meredy, thanks for coming on the show today. Are we missing anything? Anything you want to add?
No, just want everyone to come on down. I will be having a drawing for a free banner. So if you come in, you put your name in a jar, and then I let you know whether you're the winner of the free banner.
Oh. All right, Meredy, we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I would have given you all of my heart, but there's someone who's torn it apart, and he's taking just all that I have. But if you wanna try to love again, baby, I'll try to love again, but I know first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest. When it comes to being lucky, he's cursed. But when it comes to loving me, he's worst. I still want you by my side, just to help me dry the tears that I've cried. But I'm sure cause if you wanna try to love again, try. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know, oh, first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest. And when it comes to being lucky, he's cursed. When it comes to loving me, he's worst. Oh. Sure gonna give you a try. Cause
if you wanna try to love again. Baby, I'll try to love again, but I know. Oh, the first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest. And when it comes to being lucky, he's cursed. When it comes to loving me, he's worst. Oh, the first cut is the deepest. Baby, I know the first cut is the deepest. And I'll try to love again.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's home, real estate, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles and tips on home improvement. Available at locations throughout Southeast. More at seakliving.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 31st, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, about 16 minutes after the hour. In the studio with me now is Dr. Emily Kane. She's a doctor of she's a naturopathic physician and primary care doctor. Dr. Kane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's great to be here again.
Did I describe you correctly?
Absolutely. Spot on.
All right. And 25 years practicing in Juneau?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank
wow.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been great.
Oh, we're glad to have you here. And it seems like right now on your radar is marijuana as medicine. Tell us what you've been studying and what you've been concentrating on these days.
I'm a natural doctor and an herbalist, and cannabis has been up for the past 5 to 10 years. So I'm interested in the therapeutic potential. We have an endogenous endocannabinoid system, so we are hardwired for the chemical elements that are comprise THC, which is the potentially hallucinogenic one, and what all the buzz is about and why you have to go slow and be careful. So I am a purveyor, as is Rainbow Foods and several other stores in town, of the high CBD or the CBD alone, which comes from hemp. So people can be afraid of marijuana, and there's been a lot of money put into controlling marijuana, and a lot of people are in jail unnecessarily, and it's can be very helpful for people to be able to experiment with agents that improve their mood and their outlook on life and can help pain. There's some very specific endocannabinoids for specific cancers. It's a little bit hard to get the medical research. We're 50 years behind on getting medical research. So I get feedback from my patients. The short-term, like insomnia and social anxiety, say, and even pain, can be quite, you can get relief relatively rapidly, and it's easy to learn how to dose yourself with like a little puff of a vape or a little bit of oil, which is something like a sublingual oil. The endocannabinoids are like hormone. They ligand with hormone receptors, and we produce endocannabinoids. So the main one is called anandamide. It really is. I think it was named by Timothy Leary or something like that. Ananda is bliss in Sanskrit. And inducing euphoria is one of the benefits of engaging with cannabis. So I'm just going to say a couple of bad things in case anybody thinks I'm just sort of a total torchbearer. So you can get paranoid, and you can definitely fall asleep if you overdo it. And then if it gets like way too much, some of the pot symptoms are motor uncoordination, like, okay, don't drive heavy equipment, something called catalepsy, which is kind of like pre-seizure, hypothermia, shivers, feeling cold. And this is like if you really do too much. And then analgesia, like you could like kind of put your hand on a fire and wouldn't feel it as much. But those are really extreme examples which have been overplayed. But it does speak to dosing is so important. And I'm a lightweight, so 5 milligrams is the legal dose for an edible. And I believe a joint is a legal amount to sell, say, in one of the marijuana stores. And let me say right now that the pot that is being grown and concentrated in Juneau is such high quality. I know the growers, and they're going to be joining me for a community-free community info event next Thursday, a week from today, at Rainforest Farms store, which is right opposite the Wells Fargo downtown on 2nd Street, from 6 to 7. The store will be closed, so there won't be any sales at that time. And there will be experts in the legal, where we are legally with cannabis in Alaska, what's legal, what's not, can you grow in your house? The answer is yes. I'm interested in the medical benefits. We'll also have the soil experts and the breeders. One of the Barrett brothers is particularly interested in the different chemical profiles, and the state does require fairly stringent analysis of all products that get sold, but the Barretts and others go beyond that and look deep into the medicinal terpenes and different oils. And basically, one of the things I'm going to talk about next week is one way to start breaking it down, because there's so much information, is the plant more of a sativa, which is more heady, or is the plant more indica? Indica, originally meaning from India. And so the more indica plants are more body, they're more calming, and the sativa ones are more potentially hallucinogenic and mind and heart opening. And so there's different hybrids depending on what you want. So the usually you start with the indica and kind of get used to how it feels with your body, and then you can move more towards the sativas, what one way to go. But you want to be informed of what you're getting, but not be put off. So if you suffer from chronic pain, or you have a family history of neurodegenerative disease and you have anxiety, or if you have sleep trouble, or even if you have a cancer that you don't want to go 100% chemo with, there's starting to be more and more information. Realmofcaring.com is, I think, the best website. If you want to follow, like, the international and national political development, Leafly.com is an excellent website for just what's going on in the world and what's the industry doing and how are the therapeutic benefits becoming more well known.
Can you give us an example of a patient, obviously not using a name or anything like that, but what's somebody that has come to you with something and what have you prescribed them?
Good question, Scott. Yes, I have a patient who has both pain and social anxiety, and very intelligent, beautiful, has a family, has done a lot of work. My patients, I'm so lucky, my patients understand that they have to work on themselves, so I get the best patients. And, you know, we're using other drugs, pharmaceuticals, that because we have an endocannabinoid system, we have receptors for the medicine. In fact, just even biochemically, anandamide, which is our endogenous one, is very similar to THC. So there's no side effects, and that's the big deal with pharmaceuticals. They always have side effects that are kind of nasty. I listed some bad stuff that can happen, but so I prescribe some CBD oil. Like, legally, if it's called a CBD product, like, you can get it at Rainbow.
And remind me what CBD stands for.
CBD is cannabidiol, and that's the second most well-known. So the main cannabinoid is THC, the 9-delta-tetrahydrocannabinoid, and that's the hallucinogenic one that's strong. And, you know, people who just want to be stoners, that's what they kind of go for. But there's just, like, so much more to this beautiful complex plant, including hemp and food and cloth and fiber and bedding, and it's just such an amazing plant that's grown up with humans, you know, grows like a weed worldwide, except for probably not Antarctica. So she became calmer. She took an oil that was high CBD, and I had her, like, use it because it's short-acting, so if she was going to go into a meeting or, like, a stressful conference or something like that, she would take some CBD oil sublingually, and then she'd feel a lot calmer, and she'd be able to go in and, you know, do her meeting, and plus her pain got better. So I think eventually she took an oil capsule, like 25 milligrams of a high CBD capsule at bedtime, and that was definitely a success story. I've got patients with autoimmune disease, which are often irritate the neurological system, and cannabis, all flowering plants are very interesting for brain, for helping consciousness and neurological problems. And so this is like, you know, like Mondo head plant, you know, shining with resin, and there's a lot going on for it for humans, but we have to be open to it.
And backing up just for a second to that CBD oil that you prescribed, did you say that's available at Rainbow?
Yep, Rainbow Foods.
Wow.
And Mystic Treasures, I think that's the name of Sarah's store. And there's a couple of other pot stores that can't yet because it's a little fuzzy where it's regulated, and right now it's not regulated by the pot industry but just by the food industry, so it's a little complicated.
And obviously that CBD oil is legal, it's for sale. I know you're going to talk about this more at your workshop a week from today and have other people talk about this, but speak about legality just a little bit. Obviously we can go in the store and buy that. What else can people walk around with, say, on the street these days?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Scott, and let me say I'm not the expert on that, but I do know that every adult per household can maintain 6 flowering plants, and that's plenty, you know, for like, especially if you're making edibles and it really lasts, spread it out, you know, and then you're not smoking. I'm not into smoking. But walking around smoking, you can't do that, or vaping. You're not supposed to consume in public. But one of the most interesting aspects of the law developing right now is trying to create the possibility for public consumption. And so they're talking about, like, the Rainforest Farms and some of the other pot stores can have a separate sort of like cafe, but it has to be like properly ventilated and ID'd, and you can't be like running back and forth from the store buying stuff and then going. So they're developing those regulations right now. That's kind of on the forefront of the industry's interest for shaping the law continually.
You've also mentioned edibles a few times. What's the legality of those?
Oh, good question. Certainly people making their own is legal. I'm not sure about sales. I know that high CBD edibles are for sale at different stores around, but I'm not positive what the THC, but I think that some of the stores may be selling edibles. I'm not really a big consumer, so I don't really know what's available out there, but I do know that from the growers that I've met, that the pot that's being grown locally is excellent. You know, it's like super organic and really clean, and I'm so proud of Juno for that. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, yeah.
And tell us about this workshop or seminar a week from today.
It's not really a seminar. It's just a casual one-hour informational session with me and James and Giono Barrett and John Nemeth. We're going to be at Rainforest Farms store. It's going to be right after closing from 6 to 7 next
Thursday. Remind us where that one is?
It's right opposite Wells Fargo on 2nd Street downtown, so like down the street from Salt, and between the Salt and the Baranoff, and right across from Wells Fargo. And we'll present, Giono is the main grower. He'll really likes to geek out on the different components, not only all the cannabinoids, but the terpenes, which are in all foods, like clove flavor and lemon flavor and mango flavor. These are all terpenes that not only confer aroma and flavor, but medicinal value as well. So we're, you know, it's really an amazing plant. I could see why people could dedicate their lives to studying it, and there's a few, and hopefully more will come up as we move away from the misadvised fear of this plant medicine.
Okay. If somebody wanted to talk to you or become a patient of yours, how could they do that?
They could go to my website, DrEmilyCain.com. And I don't use the phone book lately, but I think I'm still in the phone book.
And where's your practice?
It's right downtown. It's between McFeeters and St. Anne's. It's in the Charter School building. And
okay.
Yeah, there's a fitness studio on the top floor. Kind of groovy little building. Are we wrapping up, Scott?
I was thinking about it.
I just wanted to mention one more thing.
Go for it.
So everybody's heard about the opioid crisis, and one of the unnecessary vilifications of cannabis is that it's a gateway drug. It's actually an exit drug, and it's interesting how some of the more progressive opioid detox clinics are using cannabis as an exit drug because it's softer and it's it can help you detox. Just this week in my inbox was, another blurb from the medical community about the opioid crisis. And let me just read this one line. These data speak loudly to the dearth of good non-opioid options. It's like, yep, right on. And this is, you know, I'm New England Journal of Medicine, Annuals of Internal Medicine, JAMA, put together this survey about the opioid problem. So we need alternatives. And the first thing to know is to explore your THC-CBD ratio. I would definitely go with a high CBD. And that's what I'm experienced with my patients, because I don't want to be stoned, and my patients don't want to be stoned. But a little bit of being stoned is fine if that's what you want to be doing right then.
Okay, and you can learn more a week from today at Rainforest. What's the full name of the store?
Rainforest Farms.
Okay. From 6 to 7 across from Wells Fargo downtown. Dr. Emily Kane, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else?
That's it, Scott.
All right.
Nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without cries. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my
bird note.
This storm is 200 miles out the center of it. Its impact is imminent.
Hurricanes threaten human life and property. They also bring tragedy to birds and other wildlife. Severe storm winds not only kill many birds, but blow others, especially seabirds, far from their normal range. During and after a hurricane, sooty terns, like the ones we're hearing, and other seabirds from the Caribbean turn up widely in our country's interior, blown hundreds of miles from the sea. Caribbean land birds, however, fare better, hunkering down and generally avoiding being blown away. But it's important also to know what happens after these disasters. Although many individuals die, most populations of birds are resilient, able to spring back from disaster, if conditions allow. Many small birds, like the Carolina wren we're hearing, breed twice in a season, and some of them lay 5 eggs or more in a clutch. If such attempts were completely successful, a pair could produce 10 or more young each breeding season. It wouldn't take long to have the population up and flying again. Fortunately, the effects of natural disasters are usually local,
and bird populations on a grand scale can, literally, weather the storm.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 31st, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 25 minutes until the top of the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 31st of August, 2017. It was in 1837 on this day Ralph Waldo Emerson delivered his famous American Scholar address to the Phi Beta Kappa Society of Harvard, telling the students to think for themselves, to create rather than repeat, and not to look to Europe for cultural models. The first radio news program was aired on this day in 1920 on station 8MK in Detroit, which the Detroit News had started up as a kind of trial. 8MK is still in business under the call letters WWJ, still an all-news station. It's the birthday of William Saroyan, Fresno, California, 1908, his parents, recent refugees from the Turkish massacres in Armenia. His father died when the boy was three. His mother put her children in an orphanage in Oakland, and Saroyan spent 5 years there before she was able to claim him again. His mother picked fruit on farms and worked in canneries. Saroyan started selling newspapers on the streets when he was 8 years old. He liked school. He had to leave at the age of 15, so he got his education in public libraries. He wrote a short story when he was in his mid-20s, The Daring Young Man on the Flying Trapeze. It was published in Story magazine. It was a big hit, and he then developed it into a book, which became a bestseller in 1934. William Saroyan, whose books were about celebrating life in the midst of poverty. Towards the end of his life, dying of prostate cancer, Saroyan said, "Everybody has got to die, but I have always believed an exception would be made in my case. Now what?" It's the birthday of Maria Montessori, born in Chiara Valley, Italy, 1870, studied engineering when she was just 13 years old, went to a technical school, then decided to pursue medicine, earned a medical degree, the first woman in Italy to do that. As a doctor, she worked with children with special needs, and she became interested in education. And she believed that children were not blank slates, but that they each had inherent individual gifts, and it was a teacher's job to help children find those gifts rather than dictating what a child ought to learn. She emphasized independence, self-directed learning, learning from peers, and she used child-sized tables and chairs in the classroom. She was opposed to the fascist regime of Mussolini during World War II, so Maria Montessori was exiled from Italy. She spent time in India and then in Holland, died in 1952. She wrote many books about her philosophy of education, including The Montessori Method, came out in 1912. Here's a poem for today by Sally Fisher, entitled Where I Come From. We didn't say fireflies, but lightning bugs. We didn't say carousel, but merry-go-round. Not seesaw, teeter-totter. Not lollipop, sucker. We didn't say pasta, but spaghetti, macaroni, noodles, the three kinds. We didn't get angry, we got mad. And we never felt depressed, dismayed, disappointed, disheartened, discouraged, disillusioned, or anything, even unhappy, just sad. Where I Come From, a poem by Sally Fisher from her collection Good Question, published by Bright Hill Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, August 31st, about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And with me here in Studio A, she's on the steering committee of 350 Juno, is Linda Buckley. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you, Scott.
And
glad to be here.
Hopefully all the way from Tenneke on the phone with us is Kathleen Moore. Can you hear us, Kathleen?
I can barely hear you.
Okay, well, it's nice to have you here. I think we're going to start with Linda, though. And Linda, we have a Con Brio concert coming up. Tell us all about it and how Kathleen's involved.
Okay, it's called A Call to Life, Variations on a Theme of Extinction, Illuminating the Impacts of Climate Change Through Music. That's the big long title. But Con Brio is now in partnership with 350 Juno on this one. So because it's bringing together Rachmaninoff, fabulous, you know, these variations on a theme of Corelli, along with Kathleen Moore, who's a writer and philosopher and professor emeritus from Oregon State, and her partner Rochelle McCabe, or her collaborator, is also a pianist and a fabulous musician, also from Oregon State.
Okay, and now just for people who don't know what 350 Juno is, give us the 101 if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, so 350.org is the national organization started by Bill McKibben, and we started a local chapter, which is actually the only one in the state, about 3 months ago. And it's a global grassroots climate movement with a mission to hold leaders accountable to the realities of the science of climate change and the principles of justice.
Okay.
So, and we thought here, you know, in Juneau, especially with the Mendenhall Glacier and all the rest of it, that it would be a great place to have it.
And you mentioned that 350 is our ideal parts per something in the air of carbon.
Yeah, 350 parts per of carbon in the air is sort of the ideal for human survival.
And right now we're at 420?
Well, I ran into a scientist, you know, who was doing research in Greenland, and she told me that they capture air and then send it to Colorado to be measured.
Huh.
And she's doing that as part of her thesis. And I said, well, what is it? And she said, well, the air in Greenland, maybe not here, was at 420. So I said, well, that sounds terrifying. But anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so 350 Juno is collaborating with Con Brio.
Yes.
To bring us this concert,
yes,
A Call to Life. And that's, this Sunday, what time and where?
Yeah, Northern Lights at 4 o'clock. And it's a one-hour program. There's a reception to follow. And we really want to encourage students and young adults to attend. And there's no admission for them. It's $20 for adults. So bring a kid, you know.
And Rachel McCabe's going to be on the piano playing Rachmaninoff. And then Kathleen, that's where you come in. You're a writer, philosopher. Tell us what you plan to communicate on Sunday.
Right. Well, I've been working for many years, speaking everywhere I can, trying to call people's attention and call people to action on these emergencies of planetary extinction and climate change and ocean acidification. And I can tell stories and I can speak and I can do many things, but it's very, very difficult to bring people to really understand what these numbers we're talking about mean. So I'm trying so hard to find a way to open people's hearts to these numbers without breaking them. I don't want people to turn away. I was speaking at Oregon State some years ago, and as I finished, I was walking down the aisle, and my friend Rochelle McCabe stood up and stopped me, and she said, "Kathy, when you speak, I hear music." I said, "What are you hearing?" She says, "I'm hearing Rachmaninoff." I said, "We have to work together." And so we did. We have this extraordinary piece that I think is probably unlike anything people have heard before, where the movements of the Rachmaninoff piano piece are woven with stories, woven with statistics, woven with the spoken word, so that a person comes away with this unitary experience of what these numbers about climate change and what the predictions about global extinctions mean, and that is not another intellectual experience. We've all had that. We all read the newspaper. We're all up to date on those. What this is a total emotional immersion carried by the music. And we find that audiences are deeply moved and very glad for a chance to come at this in quite a different way.
Okay, I bet they will be. Kathleen, where did your passion for addressing and affecting climate change begin?
Oh, goodness. Well, the moment where I said, I'm leaving the university, I'm not doing any more with environmental ethics in the classroom, I am going to take my work absolutely out into the world, was one night when I was with my granddaughter, and she sings herself to sleep, this little kid, and she was singing Laugh, Kookaburra, Laugh, Kookaburra. And I had just read scientists saying that if we don't take immediate action, by the time today's children are middle-aged, the life-supporting systems of the planet will be irretrievably damaged. And I said to myself that night, I said, the children of the world, this child, Zoe, my Zoe, by the time she's middle-aged, the life support systems will be irretrievably damaged. I said, that's it. I'm not doing anything now except trying to call people to action on climate change.
Okay. Linda, same question to you. Where did your passion for working towards changing climate change or mitigating it?
You know, I look back, and I've been a music educator for years, and I studied outdoor education way back in the 70s. And I was always trying to bring kids into the outdoors and the outdoors into the classroom. And then, you know, I have grandkids, you know. I have children that grew up here, and I just actually wrote a version of Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah with climate change, but it's too sad to sing. But it was like, I realized that for my friends that are still in kind of denial, that the ocean still looks the same. You know, still you can see the waves crashing because, you know, I said, you know, the ocean looks the same to me with crashing waves and flat calm seas, but you don't see the bits of plastic, do you? Acidification and radiation, you know, you don't see it. And I just realized through music also and the arts, to bring awareness. We did Parade of the Species for the 4th of July. And one of the tenets of 350.org is to be playful, you know, to be sure that you're not just, you know, that you're really, that you're bringing the truth of this with music, joy, poetry. And so it's nothing else to do.
Okay. So this is, remind us the details of the concert, please.
So it's this Sunday at 4 o'clock at Northern Light Church, and it's supposed to be sunny. So get out there and enjoy the sun before 4 o'clock.
Somebody's never been to Northern Light United Church. How would you describe how to get there?
It's right downtown on 11th Street. And if they need information, they can call my number at 789-0140. And as I said, there'll be a lovely reception afterwards to meet the artists and to discuss, you know, things that come up for people. And youth are free.
Okay. Kathleen, we're wrapping it up here. Is there anything that you would like to add? Give us a sort of parting thought as we get ready for Sunday's concert.
If people would like to know in advance what it will be like, they can go to my website, which is www.riverwalking.com. where there is a studio recording of the performance and where we have photographs and where we also have a pretty lively study guide for people who want to use this performance as a way to start a conversation with their neighbors and friends. So I do hope people will come. It is something like they will never have experienced before.
Okay, that's Kathleen Dean Moore calling from Tanaki and Linda Buckley here in Studio A. Thank you both for coming on the show today, and we'll see you on Sunday.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
And here with Rachmaninoff in the background for Arts Up, the one, the only Nancy DeCherney. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you.
So first Friday, big weekend.
It is a big weekend. It's a classical weekend. It's got so much going on, I can hardly stand it. But the first thing you're going to do is come to the Arts Council and get your little map so you know where you're going. We have the amazing M.K. McNaughton in our gallery this month. She has done a series of portraits, This Life, Conversations About Aging and Dying. It's beautiful. The portrait is a two-pronged endeavor involving both interviews and short statements with the charcoal portraits, and she's hanging it right now. It's lovely. And I understand there will be a poetry reading at the end of the month, so come on in and stop for that. And there's going to be a little band playing in the main hall, too, during the same time, the String Man Band. I don't know too much about them. But
a lot going on at the Art Center.
Yeah, just keep yourself busy over there. At the Alaska State Museum, it's Jackson Paulus. This is Stephen Paul Jackson, who is the son of Nathan Jackson, and he is going to be talking at 7 o'clock about his work on the Seward Shame Pole that was raised in Saxman Totem Park in April. So do stop in for that. The museum's open free of charge from 4:30 to 7, and then he'll be doing his talk after that. You can go to over to Copa and see Italian Travels with Paul Volkers, Mary Pat Wyatt, and Christine Crooks. They're beautiful watercolors that they do on their recent trip that they took. And a Little Bazaar is having, I don't have the data on it. Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. A Little Bazaar. Hal Turman and Danny Byers is over by the Whale. It's a new little shop, cute as can be, so stop in there, and they promise not only will they have this fabulous art, but yummy refreshments. So
there is the whale sculpture, the new whale sculpture. There's retail over there?
There is, but, I mean, it's not related. It just happens to be a little shop that it's called A Little Bazaar, and it's if you're in the parking lot for the Department of Labor building, mm-hmm. and it's between the Department of Labor building and the Alaska Hotel or the Juneau Hotel.
Okay.
So stop in there and just check it out because it's very cool. So let's see. And then we go to Annie Kales. She's got Ian Grant, an abstract artist. His stuff is amazing. Stop in there. That one's going to run all the way through September 1st. The Walter Soboloff building will be open. They will be featuring Robert Davidson's Crab of the Woods. He's an artist, the bronze sculptor, and he's an artist from, I think, British Columbia. They will also have works by Samuel Shakley and Renee Culp. And the shop will be featuring things in cedar. And, of course, you can get in to see the Alaska Native mask exhibit, which is pretty phenomenal. So if you haven't been there, or even if you have, it's worth another visit on Friday. Shoofly has Judy Moonbeam, a young girl who made skirts out of grandma's tablecloths and sold them in Portland. So a whole bunch of really reclaimed wearable art type stuff. Stop in at Shoofly. Wander on up the hill to Rainy Retreats. They're having Fleet Street. They do music, which is a really a nice thing. And all their vinyl records will be 15% off. You're looking excited. And so you should. Over on the Franklin Street area, we've got Barnaby Brewing Company, Juno Rocks. These are people that paint rocks and leave them around to spark happiness and stuff. So go there, and they're also their special beer is a spruce tip porter. So stop in there, a little refreshment as you're going by. The Amalga Distillery has Dean Graber. He's the Rainforest Custom Woodworking Guy. Beautiful work. Just go in there and be inspired. Kindred Post is celebrating their third anniversary. Can you believe that?
3 years.
Goodness gracious. There will be cupcakes. So you should stop there. And as well, there will be live music with Avery Stewart and a photo booth by Sydney Akagi. And a store-wide anniversary sale. And you know you can't go into Kindred Post without coming out with something more than postage stamps. So you better go in there. Juneau Artist Gallery has Meredy Davis. She is the featured artist. She will. She does cut.
Was on the show today.
Yeah, so beautiful, beautiful work. And so, stop in and visit with her, see how she does it and all that sort of stuff. We have upstairs from her, and the Bustin' Out Boutique is doing their monthly bra a giveaway, which might not mean anything to you, but for some of us, it's a pretty good deal. I know there's one more in here that I didn't catch. Downtown Dames, Tahir McGinnis presents Melanin Ante. So I don't really know what that's all about. It's a night of live models, cool shirts, fun music, drinks, and more. So you have a pretty busy day on Friday. I want to also remind people that at lunchtime, go listen to the organ. It's getting to be that kind of weather that you want to be indoors. The SOB concert is a good thing. And from 3 to 7 on Friday, there is the 170K Spotlight on Juno over at Sandy Beach. The Random Acts filmmakers want to hear from people who participated in daily acts of kindness. So stop on over there. They'll be roasting marshmallows and have a fire going so you can burn up negative thoughts and make room for more kindness in your life. How much time do we have left?
We have about a minute.
Okay, well, let's go really fast. Corks and Canvas at Nugget Mall, Fleet Street at Rainy Retreats. Let's see. We need to, this weekend, we've got the Whale, Classical Whale Cruise. We have the thing that you were just talking with Linda Buckley about. And then we have Zool Bailey and William Ransom Bach. This
a
is
ton
amazing.
Of entertainment. Yeah. And remind us where to start and to get all of this information if we didn't write it all down. Where can we get this, Nancy?
You can go on to jahc.org or ktoo.org and just stop by the Arts Council and get your little map, because I even forgot to tell you about Playboy Spaceman. You need to do that, too.
Down at the Wharf, right?
Yep.
Sunday.
After the Ransom and Zool Bailey. Zool Bailey's bringing his Grammy. You can get a selfie with it.
Nancy Vitrini, she's the executive director across the street at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council at the Arts Center. Nancy, thank you so much.
Would a single-payer healthcare system be good for Alaska? At our next Forum at 360, Dr. Carol Paris, president of Physicians for a National Health Program, will make a case for it. Then she'll discuss why it might work or fail in Alaska with a healthcare policy expert and local surgeon. Join us for the next Forum at 360 at 5 p.m. this evening. That's Forum at 360 in our building at 360 Egan Drive in downtown Juneau.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon. It looks like the forecast for tonight calls for showers, likely cloudy with a low around 50. Tomorrow, scattered showers, cloudy with a high near 55. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon.